Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
And my name is Peter.
Peter, how are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
Brilliant.
Got that out of the way. Fantastic.
Let's talk about a sponsor, shall we?
Let's.
So the sponsor this week is... I'm sorry. I've got to just take a step back and applaud ourselves for how well we did there. How efficient we
just
were.
Just really concise, but now we're losing time by applauding.
But this is how we do it.
Yeah,
we have
do.
To make up the time, by which I mean lose the time elsewhere.
Fantastic.
10 seconds of uninterrupted pattering. Smattering? Smattering?
A light flurry. Another light flurry.
Here we go. That was really weird, because not only was it very difficult to count with an irregular beat.
I forgot to count.
But also we were clapping at the same time, which of course is not how people... They don't go...
Well, they do in some countries, actually.
That's weird.
In some
Isn't
European
clapping
countries.
Strange?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Fundamentally a weird thing. Anyway, let's talk about the sponsor for this week. They allow us to do the show, of course. We're eternally grateful for these very real sponsors. This week it's a film.
Okay.
We're sponsored by the upcoming movie Doom Fraternal.
Oh, Doom Fraternal.
Yes.
Two brothers in a van.
Honestly?
And then they,
very close.
They went to hell. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
So this, it follows Greg and Johannes. They're two brothers.
Mm.
There's this demon invasion that happens. It's just hugely inconvenient. Oh, so many hijinks. It's a comedy.
Oh, yeah.
It's written and directed by Paul Feig, who,
Doom
of course,
is pretty funny.
You'll know from Bridesmaids, The Heat, and the Ghostbusters all-female cast reboot.
I think you mean Feige.
I actually don't. And it stars Kristen Wiig, and Melissa McCarthy as Greg and Johannes.
Oh, okay.
And Paul Feig just lets them do what they want.
Yeah.
It's got an improvisational tone.
Right.
It's funny. It's empowering. There's a talking demon called Jeremy.
Ah, Jeremy.
Who they're best mates with. What I'm saying is director and writer Paul Feig has done another outstanding job here by just sort of letting his cast run rampant over the whole production.
Mm-hmm. And then he gets to just put his name on it at the end.
And he just laughs along. He just goes,
they do all the work.
Cut. That was perfect. So Doom Fraternal, it's in cinemas next month.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's about two bungling brothers just trying to save the day. The world's been taken over by demons, and it's up to the two bungling brothers,
and
Greg and Johannes, and Jeremy. Mm-hmm. But you don't meet Jeremy until Act Two.
Okay.
And then there's this whole betrayal thing, where does Jeremy feel a stronger sense of camaraderie mm-hmm. and kinship with the demons?
Yeah.
Or is it the love that the two brothers, played by Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy, show that allows him to sort of see through the darkness and come to the light, even though he's a horribly deformed red horned boy.
The real demons were the bad things that we did to other people down deep inside within us, our friendship, the friendship we made along the way.
Exactly.
.com.
But it's not real.
That's a lie, that.
That's a lie. In fact, the only thing that is a lie there is that it's coming out next month, because this is coming out in April.
Oh, right.
So,
okay.
tiny lie.
Yeah.
Don't worry, Doom Fraternal is not real and Paul Feig is nowhere near it. The real sponsors, Peter, as they are week to week, are the wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/TeamTripleJump. If you support us at any financial tier, you get access to the podcast post that we do weekly. It goes up on a Tuesday and I tend to gather the questions on a Wednesday, so you've got about 24 hours to submit questions then. And you can ask questions on the show. It supports us. The lowest tier that you can donate at is $1, which is extremely affordable. Mm-hmm. You don't have to, obviously. The fact that you're listening or watching this means the world to us as it is. But if you want to ask questions and you want to support us in the process, then that's how you do it. But there are other tiers. We'll talk about those at the end of the show if you feel you know, that you're able to support us a little bit more financially. But $1, you get to ask questions on the show. Speaking of which, it's Araren May, whose name I have typoed quite spectacularly. I'm really sorry. Araren.
Araren May. There's an extra R in it.
Will Araren?
Araren May. What is a game that you have found yourself buying on multiple platforms? I'm playing Puzzle Quest on Switch, and this is at least the third time, DS, then iOS, now Switch, that I've bought it.
My goodness.
Wow.
I've never heard of Puzzle Quest.
I feel like I might have heard of it, but I have no idea what it is. It just... it's in my head, just sort of in a box.
What's Puzzle Quest?
Here's some information.
It's in a
Puzzle Quest, Challenge of the Warlords is a game developed by Australian company Infinite Interactive. The game combines role-playing and tile-matching elements. Taking place in a high fantasy setting, the player moves their character around the game's world and encounters monsters and other enemies to fight as to gain experience. Brilliant. Thanks, Wikipedia.
To fight as, to gain experience.
Oh, that's true. Possibly. Maybe I was reading it with the wrong intonation.
Yeah, I don't know.
My bad.
Games that are owned on multiple platforms.
Can you say that word again, the first word?
Games.
Games.
That are owned on multiple platforms. I own or have owned Skyrim on three platforms.
Okay.
Three out of the 27 that it's available on.
Which ones are those?
Xbox 360, I had it on originally, physically.
Yeah.
Then I got it on Steam, digitally, of course. And I also now own it on the PS4.
PlayStation 4.
Yeah. Likewise, in fact, those exact three platforms, I suspect by the end of the month I will own Bioshock on all three of those. I currently have owned it on 360 and have it on Steam. It's currently on
the BioShock Collection, PlayStation Plus.
Exactly. Yeah, the entire collection. Indeed.
Whoa.
I own all three on Steam, but I only owned one and two on 360. But I'm thinking about getting Plus again. My Plus ran out in January, and I'm like, well, I need to. I know that at some point in the next 12 months I'll want it, so I may as well just get it now, so I can have the game that I really like.
It's true.
Yeah.
You've got a couple of weeks left.
I have.
You've got time to mull it over and think about what you want to do.
Yeah.
What would you rather spend that £6 on? Mm. You could get £6 coins.
Do you pay monthly?
Not anymore.
No, I don't.
I need to just buck up my ideas, bucko buddy, and just pay for a whole year because I know it's cheaper.
Mm.
Because I've definitely consistently had PlayStation Plus for a year now, but it keeps running out and just going. I don't want to spend £48.
Right.
I'll spend 20 and get 3 months. And right. I know it adds up bad for me.
Yeah.
And my
I've
wallet.
Only ever bought Xbox Live and PlayStation in like 12-month chunks, which it is like a big. You do kind of feel like, oh god, £40 down the drain. But then, you know, you then like within 3 months, you feel like I've had £40 worth of entertainment out of this already.
Yeah.
And then for the rest of the year, you've still just got Plus forever.
Yeah.
Forever
for the rest of the year. I do play online a lot though, so that actually makes a difference. Not competitively, mind. Competitive multiplayer, I'm not a fan of, but I play co-op games online. So
right. Yeah.
It makes sense for me to have it.
What games do you own a million times?
Can you guess?
I'm trying to think of games that are out on lots of platforms. I mean, how many times have you had Skyrim? Probably only twice, right?
Once.
Once?
Yeah. One and done.
Yeah.
As I've spoken about before, played it a 1,000,000,000 hours of it on PS3 the first month it came out, and then it just ruined it for me. And
never
I
got it again for PS4.
Not interested. Been tempted a couple of times and then just couldn't do it. Couldn't face it.
Mind you, like, because you don't really play games on PC either, so it would have to be something that's just been available across the PlayStation years, just multiple times. So, I don't know, Metal Gear Solid, but you wouldn't buy that. Like, for what's the answer?
Okay, that's the real question. Yeah. Final Fantasy VII.
Oh, of course.
I own it on 5 platforms. I own it physically.
5?
Yep, I own it physically on PS1. A UK copy. I own it physically on PS1, a Japanese copy. I own it physically on PC.
Do you?
Yep. I own it digitally on PS4, and I own it digitally on the PlayStation Classics PS3, PSP/Vita digital release that they did. The PS4 one with trophies and stuff. So that's 5. I've got 5 copies of that.
Wowza.
And if the remake counts, that's a 6th. Yeah. Warming up, that's a 10.
God, that is a 10.
So that's a lot. I was thinking maybe the Pokemon games, but actually, no, because they don't release them on many platforms. Yeah. I've got many copies of them, but in terms of individual releases, Final Fantasy VII, 5. 5 whole releases.
Gee Willikers,
am I right?
Wilsons, yeah.
Let's move on to something that we've actively been playing rather than just collecting and buying again like a big silly boy.
Oh.
Or girl.
Or girl.
It's time for What We Playing. What We Play In Time, peepers, toilet paper.
Yeah.
Tell me about what you've been playing at home in your house.
I've been playing a couple of things at home in my house. This week I've been playing Resi 4, as usual. I realised when I downloaded the VOD from my most recent stream that I've just done the 6th part on that, which is, I think that's the longest I've ever streamed any game in a row.
I think I'm up to maybe 10 on Stardew now. I've stopped numbering them. Not consecutively.
It's
a filler
consecutively
game.
But that's not at home in my people house. At home in my people house, I've continued to play Crash Bandicoots.
Oh, how are you getting on with the boob scoops?
I'm okay. I've got I think I've got about 5 relics left to do.
Because you're going for the platinum in 2?
Yeah, in 2. Right. Yeah, I've got the platinums in the other 2 of the trilogy. We mean
trophy, of course, rather, because I'm sure, are there platinum relics in?
Yeah, there are, actually. Right, yeah, okay. Platinum trophy I'm going for. Incidentally, though, just because I've got the platinum in Crash 3 doesn't actually mean that I've got all the trophies, because they added trophies after the fact for the new downloadable levels. In fact, they've done it for Crash 1 as well, because they added Stormy Ascent, didn't they? That horrible deleted level.
Awful, dreadful, cursed level.
And I think you get trophies for getting gold platinum, gold relic in that, or something ridiculous, which is... Oh,
sounds fun.
Yeah.
Sounds like a whole weekend.
Yeah, it really does. But yeah, Crash 2, just been chipping away at those relics, really. Mm. Got some sewer levels to do, which, not that fun. But it's going okay.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. There's wrestling in my direct line of vision, and my yeah,
there is.
I'm just getting distracted.
I feel like there is actually another game I've played this week, but I'll have to think about it. But yeah,
you've played outside in the sun.
Oh yeah,
that's what you've done.
Tag.
You can't say it.
Or
that.
Tag.
Or tag. Mm. I have played a bit more Resi 6. Still sort of chipping away at that at home in online co-op. I'm playing through the Ada campaign at the moment.
Right.
That is a woeful campaign.
It's got a scary boss in it, though.
Is it?
Yeah, the one that turns into the ship, or it takes over the ship with its blobs.
Oh, yeah.
A doppelganger girl. It's like a...
Blobbleganger.
Yeah, it's just a big face in the wall, and it makes weird noises and has big teeth.
Mm.
Yeah, it's horrible.
You played it in co-op?
No.
See, that's where the real Dark Souls begins.
Yeah.
Because one of you gets to play as, I think, citation needed, our lowest ranked Resident Evil character.
Oh.
In the every playable Resi character ranked from worst to best.
Oh, God.
Agent.
Agent.
Who they patched in when people complained that Ada's campaign was not co-op and the rest of them were. So they patched in Agent, who's just along for the ride.
Why not just give him a name?
No. They could have made him Hunk. Could have made them hunk.
Yeah, it could have just been Hunk.
Because he's got Hunk tendencies.
Right.
His quips are great.
Yeah.
One of his things he can say is, nice.
Oh, nice.
Nice. Good job.
Wow.
Nice.
Does he wear a gas mask like Hunk? So he's just dressed as like Umbrella
Security.
He has
no face. Yeah. He's got no face. You can't see him. He's just security. He's just agent. Whenever Ada uses her grappling hook to go to a new area, agent gets teleported along because he can't use a grappling hook. He also can't open doors or interact with puzzles or press buttons. He's just there to shoot things. It's brilliant.
What, even, but you mean in co-op?
Yep.
He can't do those things.
All the credit in the world for them to making it co-op after the fact, but it's hilariously bad.
You think they'd just be able to sort of copy and paste a lot of the animations onto just a new skeleton? But
you would,
I guess not.
No, it's too complicated.
Yeah.
So agent's just there, and I'm playing as agent, which is a real eye-opening experience.
Brilliant.
Because I don't know if I'm stuck or if I just don't have a button prompt because I'm not Ada Wong.
Yeah.
So that's fun. I've also been playing BioShock, not only on stream, but I've been playing it at home as well in my free time, my spare time.
Yeah.
And bloody hell, what a wonderful video game that is.
It's so good, isn't it?
It's the level of tension that sort of permeates the first few hours of that game. And it gets less tense as you go.
Yeah.
Because
it's like any spooky game is like that, really.
You get more comfortable, you get more powerful. Mm. But the first few hours when you're making your way around, and it's very clever with how it uses music and shadows.
And light, yeah, shadow.
You know, they will frequently just turn out the lights, or they will make something come on screen like fog that will just cover the entire screen. And you know the only reason they're doing it is because they're moving something around or placing something in a room or putting an enemy directly behind you. So when you turn around,
yeah,
that's there now.
In the hospital, I know which bit you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot like that. And the fact that they don't introduce enemies who are pretending to be dead on the floor until about hour 8 is really unfair.
Yeah.
Because just when you think everything's fine, you start trying to loot bodies and they go, and they stand up and start shooting at you. That's not okay. It's not okay.
Oh, I just remember the bit with the woman who's like sort of, I can't remember if she's crying or not, but she's like talking to a pram. You just see her shadow before you're around
right
the corner.
Yeah, it's right at the start,
isn't it? Yeah, it's really early on. And you see her standing there and you're like, oh God, she's talking to a pram. Okay, what's going to be in there? Is it empty? Is there a dead child in there? What's happening?
Is she friendly?
Maybe she's just a poor woman. Who's, yeah. And then you go around the corner. Isn't there just a gun in there?
It's just a massive gun in there. Yeah. There's a pistol in there, which always looks weird because when you're holding it, it just looks like a regular pistol, but it's the size of the pram when you go up to it. So I'm near the end of that now. I was pushing on last night because I felt like I was really close to the end. I've gotten past Andrew Ryan, and I won't say any more than that. But I in my head, because I haven't played it for so long, I thought, oh, well, that's pretty much the end of the game, isn't it? But actually, it continues for a little while after that.
Little sister stuff after that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Spoilers.
So that's where I am currently, and I'm really, really enjoying it.
I'm looking forward to you playing Bioshock 2, because you've never played that,
No,
have you?
No, that's what I'm going on to next.
And
I'm
I really like that
to,
game.
To experiencing it for the first time.
Yeah, it's not Bioshock 1, but I still...
It's more Bioshock.
I still dig it.
What we were talking about a few months ago, whenever it was, when 2K confirmed that they were opening a new studio to make a new Bioshock game without Ken Levine and without Irrational involved. That, you know, it's a bit like if Bandai Namco decided, oh, we're going to do another Dark Souls without Miyazaki.
Mm.
It's like, wow, well, at the end of the day, at this point, I kind of just want some more Dark Souls. Yeah. I kind of just want some more Bioshock. So I'm looking forward to playing Bioshock 2, giving that a go, because I feel like I unfairly overlooked it. So I'm looking forward to rectifying that.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing I played, and we've covered it on the channel now, is Two Point Hospital on PS4.
Yes.
We were fortunate enough to get a code about a week early from... Dead Good Media and Jake over at Dead Good Media. So thank you very much to him for that.
Thank you, Jake.
We've made a quipscope on it about my experiences with the game. Mm-hmm. Played it for a few hours. Obviously, it's been out for a while on Steam and PC, but it's coming to consoles now.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that's out properly next week.
Yeah.
So make sure you give that a good old go.
I'm really looking forward to it.
I really like it.
At time of recording, I've not played. We were very kindly given two codes, actually, so we could both play it. And I'm yet to play mine, but really excited to.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, I haven't obviously played the PC version, so I've got nothing to compare it to. But as my first time experiencing Two Point Hospital full stop,
yeah,
it's really good. It's a really good approximation to theme hospital. Mm-hmm. And anyone who's interested in that sort of quirky 90s British game developer humor, rare humor, you should go check that out. Was it Rare? No, it was Bullfrog.
No, it was Bullfrog. Bullfrog. Yeah. I thought you meant unusual.
Right, yeah.
Uncommon.
Rare, uncommon. But it's sort of it's sort of Rare, Bullfrog, those 90s British developers that, and who was it that did Black and White and Fable?
Oh, Lionhead.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. The heyday was in the 90s. So, go check it out. It's very good. Mm. Very, very good indeed. And go watch the Quipscope video we made about it. Peter.
Yeah.
Time for question two.
It's a question from Philip Reed.
Will Philip Reed? No, but he will write.
No, but our Aaron May.
Who's Aaron?
Our Aaron.
Our Aaron.
Are there any... Would you like to read this one?
No.
Are there...
No, I don't. I actively don't want to.
Are there...
No.
Any enemies or bosses you felt bad about killing? I'm replaying Hollow Knight, which is great, by the way, and nearly all of the baddies initiate combat, so fighting them is just part of your own survival. In a few cases, though, you'll need to kill something docile, as they say in America.
Docile.
Just because it's in your way. That sort of makes you the baddie, in that case. Which murders have you felt bad about or regretted committing? In brackets, no real-life murder confessions, please.
Peter Rostin.
Mm.
We do not need your confessions here.
We do not want your confessions.
I got one.
Yeah.
Sif from Dark Souls.
Oh, Sif.
Sif.
It's a pretty good cleaning product, though, to be fair. Sif. Just, it's not a pun. Don't try and work it out. It's just
natural. No. I'm just, I understand. I'm just letting it. I'm just letting you hang.
Letting it. Okay, let me, I'll do it again, then let it hang. Oh, Sif. But, I mean, it's a pretty good cleaning product, though. So, because it's a real cleaning product.
That's a great future sponsor, though. Mm. You should hold on. You should put that one in your back pocket. Sif, the dog. Sif the wolf. Sif, the dog man.
I'm aware of Sif. Having not played the game, I'm still aware of Sif, and it's sad.
It is sad. Mm. So Sif is the faithful wolf puppy hound of Artorias.
A big one.
The knight.
He's a big puppy
hound.
He's
a huge puppy hound. He's massive. He's guarding the grave of Artorias. He's not undead. He's not a demon. He's not a monster. But he picks up his master's sword as you go to plunder his grave for an item that you need. And it's his duty to protect the grave.
Yeah.
And he reluctantly picks up the sword, and he does battle with you, and he makes sort of squeaking noises when you hit him. Mm. And towards the end of the fight, he starts limping, and it's not awesome at all.
No.
And if you play the DLC, Artorias of the Abyss, which sort of transports you back in time, to allow you to actually fight Artorias, mm-hmm. because he's a hero of legend, but he's succumbed to the abyss and been sort of turned, and he's gone mad, mm-hmm. and you need to kill him. You find Sif as a puppy.
Yeah.
And you can save Sif the puppy and summon Sif the puppy for the final battle of the DLC. So you've got little puppy Sif running alongside you, fighting in the battle.
So he's your friend even more than he was before.
Yeah, and he's not very good because he's a puppy, and you know, you're fighting Manus, the World Eater, or whatever the hell it is, the Abyss Maker, the Earthquaker, the Ground Shaker.
Yeah.
The Manus, the being who stirs his tea and then puts the teaspoon back in the sugar.
Oh no.
That's what you're fighting.
Manus, the Ball Fondler.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that could be a good thing depending on what you're into.
True.
But Sif is not massively effective in that fight. And after you've done that, if you play it in the order where you do that before you fight Sif, if you then go and fight Sif, you get a different cutscene where Sif pins you to the ground, sniffs you, and recognizes you.
Oh, God.
And then even more reluctantly goes to pick up its sword and fight you.
Sif, no.
It's really sad. So that is one that I... That was just sort of a sad necessity in a game that makes you kill a lot of things that wants to kill you.
Yeah, and then suddenly you meet this thing that, you know, it's just doing its duty, but you still have to kill it.
Yeah.
It's sad.
You do.
In a similar way, but kind of a bit, it seems might be a bit of a weird choice. I find that almost all, some more than others, of the enemies in BioShock, I actually feel really sorry for. But I mean, I'm mostly talking about, obviously, little sisters, but they're not really your enemies, are they? But certainly, I've never, ever, ever harvested a little sister in my entire life of playing that game. Never.
It's like we were talking about last week. Your power fantasy in video games is to be nice to everyone.
Yeah.
And have everyone like you.
But even little sisters aside, because they're not really your enemies, big daddies I feel bad about, because they don't actually attack you unless you go and try and grab his little sister. Mm-hmm. And they just sort of moan like whales. They're like big whale men, aren't they, really?
And they're people in there as well, aren't they?
They are. But even to a very much lesser extent, the splicers, some of them I feel a little bit bad for, because they're just kind of, they've just been driven mad by a dystopia and like drug abuse effectively. Mm-hmm. And you know, some of them are just really violent and horrible, but some of them you kind of look at them and you can almost see the person that they used to be.
Yeah.
But you know, other obvious choice, the Colossi from Shadow of the Colossus.
Yeah, of course.
In a kind of Big Daddy sort of way. And also, if you know what happens at the end of that game, then going back and replaying it and having to kill them, you're like, oh, what am I doing? But the other one I thought of was Oblivion has a bunch of people in it that you kind of have to kill for quests that I felt really bad about doing. There was the Dark Brotherhood quest, I don't know if you remember that, where you make your way up through the ranks of the Dark Brotherhood, and then sort of maybe two-thirds of the way through the quest line, you start getting given contracts to kill all the other members of the Dark Brotherhood.
Right, yeah.
And it actually turns out that there's something dodgy going on and someone's tricking you, and they're not actual official contracts. But you then kill everyone in the Dark Brotherhood, and then the head guy, is he called, I think he's called Lucien Lachance or
right,
something?
Yeah.
He comes and he's like, oh, I thought I could stop you, get you in time. And then he tells you, like, yeah, you've been played like a fiddle.
Like a damn fiddle!
Also in Oblivion, do you remember the Grey Prince, the grand champion of the arena?
Yes.
There's a quest line before your final fight that you can do where he wants to know about his dad, because he's half orc and half something else. Mm-hmm. And when you go and find his dad's journal, it turns out he was a vampire. And then the Grey Prince says, oh, I'm like half dirty, rotten bloodsucker.
Right.
Just kill me. And then you have a fight with him and he just doesn't attack you. He just says, kill me.
That's tragic.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
But you get that sick reward money.
Yeah.
And you get the admiring fan.
The fan,
as well.
The adoring fan,
he'll
or whatever. He'll
follow
it's
you everywhere. Oh, some real sad options in there.
Yeah.
I will say quickly, going back to the splices from Bioshock, when I was exploring some of the apartments, the very fancy apartments, last night, which is where I was up to in the game.
Yeah.
There was one, I think it was in Sander Cohen's flat, and I didn't get the trophy for going into Sander Cohen's flat in his private residence. And I checked, and there's a trophy for it, and it didn't pop, and I don't understand. There was a piano song playing, and two splicers dancing, just like hugging each other and like slow dancing around. And I was like, oh, man. And I fired a grenade at them.
Oh.
But yeah, you do feel bad because these people are sort of, you hear the stuff they say, like, well, we're just going to have to, we'll have to meet the such and such next week, won't we?
Yeah,
let's go for a stroll in the park. Like they're just completely lost in their own minds. Mm. So yeah, there is the whole game is tragic, really.
Yeah.
All of it. All the characters are tragic in some way. Well, it's time, Peter, for something very odd, very weird.
And very new.
Is it?
Yes.
Yeah. It's time for weird news.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Weird news time!
Yes.
Peter,
mm-hmm.
Is it going to get strange in here?
It's going to get very strange. It's also going to get sweary. I'm warning everyone now.
Are you going to do a swear?
I'm going to say one swear word.
What level of swear are we talking? F.
I'm going to say the F word.
Do you have to?
Yeah.
Can you say flip instead?
I think just for effect, I need to say it once. And then after that, I will just say flip.
Okay.
But it won't have the same, even if you know what I'm substituting it for, it won't have the same effect unless I say it.
Okay. Everybody listening,
mm-hmm.
There is going to be one uncensored,
yeah.
That's the word, isn't it? Not uncensored.
No.
Uncensored swear word
mm-hmm.
in a matter of moments. Please avert your ears if you are delicate,
yeah.
And then normal safe for work broadcasting will resume.
Turn Granny's wireless radio up really loud so she can't hear.
Turn off her hearing aids.
Oh no, don't do that.
Just lock her out the room.
Yeah. This is according to Kotaku.co.uk, Alistair Jones. Steam's Google description briefly reads, "Fuck Epic Games Store."
Wow.
There we go. I'm not going to say that word anymore.
Okay.
If you went looking for a specific PC gaming platform on Google earlier today, you may have been met with a surprising result. For a few hours this morning, the search engine's description of Steam's official website read "Flip Epic Games Store," followed by a ream of weird symbols. That is what it looks like. Welcome to Steam, and that was the description.
Flip Epic Games Store.
Flip Epic Games Store, and then a few symbols.
Strange symbols.
Kotaku got this via PC Games N, it says. That's obviously quite a blunder, but thankfully, it only showed up if your search term was Steam Store. It also poses the question of how exactly this happened. It's not exactly great PR for one website to be taking profanity-ridden shots at another. The answer appears to stem from a particular review posted in the early hours of Tuesday morning by a Steam user going by the name Rommel. His review of Metro Exodus, which arrived on Valve's platform recently after a year on Epic Store, reads, "Flip Epic Games Store," followed by ASCII art. Is mm-hmm. that how it's pronounced? I've never
Probably.
Really said that out loud.
ASCII.
ASCII. Art of a raised middle finger. These reviews can appear next to the relevant game on Steam's homepage. So it's possible Rommel showed up this morning on the homepage before being scraped up by the Google bots and put into the description, I guess.
Oh.
Either way, someone appears to have taken action as the Google description has returned to normal. But there you go.
Wow.
So someone posted a review that said "Flip Epic Games Store," and Google thought that is what it should include in the description for
Brilliant.
Steam Store.
Gotta love that. Faultless algorithm.
Mm, yeah.
It works really well. Well, we can't have that as the headline story for the,
we
episode,
can't.
Can we?
No,
so no pressure on me
so
at
I
all.
I really, really hope that you're not talking about war crimes or something.
It's been
1 week since you looked at me.
1 month since we last talked about this game.
Could it be Fallout 76?
Oh, it might be.
Mm.
We go back to Kotaku now. Baktaku.
Okay. Yeah.
Kobaku,
yeah.
Kotaku. This comes from Ethan Gack. Fallout 76 players keep crashing servers to duplicate the game's strongest armor. It's happening again.
Oh, dear.
Fallout 76's Strangler Heart power armor is very strong, and it's... Sorry, I thought the camera turned off then. That was really weird. It caught my eye. You ever get that sometimes where nothing moves... But something reflective in your room, in a room you're in, suddenly catches your eye. Like, what's that?
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is about your brain that makes you do that. But for some reason, I thought the display had turned off on the camera and something bad was happening. Let me try again. Fallout 76's Strangler Heart power armor is very strong and it's supposed to be incredibly hard to get. But thanks to the game's latest duplication exploit, more players than ever are running around in it. While Fallout 76 has been plagued by duplication glitches of one sort or another for most of its existence, this latest one revolves around trading sets of Strangler Heart power armor, a reward for completing the game's arduous Vault 94 raids that were meant to be one of a kind. Mm. Unlike other items in the game, the Strangler power armor can only be crafted from plans dropped in the raid. The plans can't be traded either. Don't do the raids, don't get the power armor. Except that now, thanks to a new exploit, the rare gear is easier than ever to acquire. Brilliant. Pulling off the exploit requires two players. The first drops their Strangler power armor so the second player can hop into it and claim it as their own. They then immediately crash the server so that when they log back on, the game thinks they both own a set. Crashing the server on command might seem hard, but thanks to a building glitch that lets players stack as many metal walls on top of one another as they like, it's actually quite easy.
Oh, gosh.
As a result, the game's subreddit is currently full of reports from players across PS4 and Xbox One complaining about both unstable servers and an abundance of Strangler power armor. Sites like eBay and other black market hotbeds for trading in-game loot are currently full of listings for the gear, with prices dropping as low as $10 in some cases. It's understandable why players might be willing to fork over the equivalent of one of Fallout 76's microtransactions for the set, since it's so hard to get the standard way. In addition to needing to collect all the crafting plans for the Strangler power armor, players also have to collect enough Vault 94 steel to actually make it, requiring dozens of hours stuck carrying out the same tedious raid missions over and over.
God, I mean, the worst part about that is that the duplication glitch requires the players to crash a multiplayer server, not a private server, a server that's like being run by Bethesda. So that there's, you know, how many is it, like about 12 players to a server in that game?
Or something to a world, like that. Sorry. Yeah, I think you can have up to 20 if something.
All right. Okay. Well, so in any case, if there's a fairly full world and then someone decides that they're going to do that glitch, that's like, you know, 12 to 20 people who are going to have their server crashed because someone wants some armor.
Yeah.
So
also, some of my most frustrating times with Fallout 76 were because of server crashes. Mm-hmm. Like launching nukes was a complete task.
Yeah.
Because it took about an hour and a half of actually playing it to get from the start of entering the bunker to launching the codes, because you have to go all over this underground nuclear bunker,
right,
depending on which one you go to. It's exactly the same. And each time I got maybe an hour into it and the server crashed. Yeah. And it might have just been some selfish asshole duplicating wood or something.
Yeah, just
because
for fun.
This has always been how you've had to duplicate it. I remember looking up the glitch videos at the time,
right,
and they always had a really healthy dislike ratio because people were rightly saying, you guys are just saying, you know, and then crash the server.
Mm.
It's like, but that really negatively impacts other players. I don't care if you're duplicating stuff, but when you have to ruin someone else's experience potentially to do it, then that's a dick move,
it
quite
is,
frankly.
Yeah.
Big old dick move.
Yeah. Well, God, on that bombshell, should we move on to question 3?
Yeah, let's do it.
It's from Jim Johns.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah.
Hi, BB and TP.
Hi.
Are the company practices of EA, Ubisoft, and Activision hurting the games industry, with them intentionally shipping lower quality unfinished products to maximize profits, expecting customers to pay full price for incomplete products, seems unsustainable. What would it take for this corporate greed to end and get back to making quality games like they used to? Mass Effect 2, Dead Space, Mirror's Edge, Beyond Good and Evil, Splinter Cell. I do not buy games from EA or Ubisoft anymore, as they don't seem to care about the games or the experience the players have with them. Why do you think people keep buying unfinished games from these companies rather than waiting to buy better games from better companies like Naughty Dog and Santa Monica?
Thank you, Jim Johns.
Hey, JJ.
I mean, first off, the one thing I would address from that is that, unfortunately, you know, people just do both. I think people probably are buying good games from Naughty Dog and Santa Monica, but they're also buying the low quality games. So it's not even that people kind of have to make the decision, you know, one versus the other, because, you know, games are, as a very general rule, brought out spread apart enough that lots of people, if they're in a fortunate position, are able to just, you know, afford to get both because they're a month apart or whatever. So sadly, it's not enough that there's a load of good alternative games coming out, because people would just get both rather than like have to choose from one or the other.
Yep, yeah. Agreed. There's a number of reasons why people are buying these games, you know, and not all of them are unfinished. Mm. Some of them are just bad. Mm. You know, you look at Ghost Recon Breakpoint. It's just a bad game.
Yeah,
just a really bad game. So these games, these non, I'm assuming when Jim Johns is referring to Naughty Dog and Santa Monica, we're talking big AAA single player narrative driven experiences that are complete and don't need to be iterated on or really patched in any meaningful way.
Yeah.
The other games, they come out more regularly for a start.
Yeah, true.
You're getting an Assassin's Creed game every couple of years. You're getting a Ghost Recon game every other year. Mm. You know, Watch Dogs every other year. It all just keeps rolling around. So these games are out almost every year anyway.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're getting two or three Ubisoft games a year. And people just want to buy them.
Yeah.
And they're also usually of decent quality. They're usually of decent enough quality. You're expecting 80s maybe for most of these games, 80% scores. So you know you're getting you may not enjoy them. They may not be for you, but you know, if you're getting a Far Cry game,
yeah,
it's going to be of a certain quality, even if, in my opinion, you're playing the same game you've been playing for the past 5 years with a different, you know, coat of paint on it.
Yeah, I agree. But as much as that is the case, they do happen to just like look superficially enticing, and like you say, they're getting like 80% or whatever, so yeah, people aren't going to be turned off enough in that respect.
They also have a bigger marketing budget. You see them everywhere. You see Ghost Recon on buses, you see Far Cry on TV spots before, you know, films at the cinema and all sorts of other things. So these games permeate the more casual gaming audience far more than let's say Uncharted 4 would have, even though, or would have, sorry, how embarrassing.
Would have.
Uncharted 4, though, you know, these big games, they still have a really big marketing push, but they are ultimately targeted towards a core audience who are already invested in them. So another part of their allure that ties into the marketing is that they're an event. You know, these games coming out, they're really special, and they're not just going to be at every single consumer gaming show. They'll host behind closed doors things. They'll be at E3 for press, but that's kind of it. They'll show a trailer around that time, around the time of Gamescom, for example, and then press will be able to play a section.
Yeah.
And that'll be it. Whereas, again, going back to Ubisoft or EA, you're going to be able to play Assassin's Creed the month before it comes out at a show. Mm-hmm. You're going to be able to play Far Cry. You're going to be able to play the new Star Wars game, you know, Battlefront 3 or whatever. So really, they're just, these perceived lower quality games are just more available. And people ultimately have games consoles because they want to play stuff.
Yeah.
And if these games are more easily accessible and they're of reasonable quality, people will keep buying them.
Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, you know, I'm only sort of dealing with the examples given here by Jim Johns, and there might be, I love saying that name, Jim Johns, and there might be plenty of others that sort of break this rule. But looking at that, you know, EA, Ubisoft, Activision, those games by those companies, as a general rule, are released multi-platform. Whereas you look at something by, you know, Naughty Dog, for example, that's going to be a PlayStation exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
And so if those things are going out on all platforms, you only have to, in a way, you only have to satisfy a slightly smaller section of the pie percentage-wise, because that percentage spread across several platforms means you're still going to do massive numbers on your sales.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it might not even necessarily be that these games continue to be made because loads of people are buying them, like proportionally. It's more like loads of people are buying them cumulatively, because when they're spread across several platforms, your sales are going to be higher anyway, and that supports games like this being made. Even if you actually broke down and looked at the stats, you know, I don't know the answer to this, but maybe it's the case that like a Naughty Dog game on PlayStation sells more than an Ubisoft game on PlayStation alone. Mm. It probably isn't actually the case, but you know, it would be interesting to see those stats and how they compare.
Yeah, and moving on to Jim John's other point about the fact, you know, when will the corporate greed end? It won't, unfortunately.
No, never will.
The main The main point is, though, when you're talking about unfinished products to maximize profits, you're talking, I'm assuming, about microtransactions and season passes and all that kind of stuff. I feel like I don't want to keep picking holes in them, but Ubisoft in particular, their big games seem to launch with about three or four different tiers every time.
Yeah.
So you can get the gold, Assassin's Creed gold bundle that'll come with a season pass and some in-game boosters and stuff.
Skins.
I hate that. I absolutely hate that. And there's a good chance that a lot of other people hate that as well and probably don't even buy it. They just buy the base game, not even knowing that that exists. But if you want, it's sort of a tale as old as time. Mm-hmm. If you want something to change, you have to not buy it. Yeah. And the more people that don't buy it, the better. And I know that it feels futile sometimes because, you know, it's Assassin's Creed and I want to play the new Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
I don't like the fact that there's a gold and a platinum and a silver package or whatever the hell it is.
Mm.
But I do, you know, I want to play the new Assassin's Creed, so I'm going to buy it. But the fewer people that do buy it and do buy the premium versions, the more they'll take a step back and look at that. And that goes for, again, talking about Ghost Recon Breakpoint, which was reviewed so poorly.
Yeah.
That it caused Ubisoft to delay most of the games from their original sort of release points that they had in the pipeline,
mm-hmm.
because they needed to go back and rework them. And this was the low point for them. This was the breaking point for them, where they realized that actually, oh, okay, something is unsustainable here. We're seeing low sales. We're seeing really poor reviews. Our method is flawed.
Mm.
Let's go away and fix that. And that's how it happens a lot of the time. Something really bad happens, like with Star Wars Battlefront 2.
Yeah.
Or people just stop buying it, or a combination of both.
Mm-hmm.
And then when something good comes along, like Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order,
yeah.
which is probably what you're referring to in terms of something that is a complete product, even though
it was pretty glitchy,
didn't really work very well. Lots of people bought it. And that sends a very clear signal.
Well, they're talking about it now, about doing another one.
Well, exactly.
Now,
yeah. yeah. People want that. There's a huge audience for that will support it sometimes just by virtue of the fact that they don't feel like they're being taken for a ride, that they've bought a game and then they're having to continue to pay money into it to get the full experience.
Yeah. And it's nice to sort of see that actually happening, both in terms of EA being told, hey, do more of this, and Ubisoft being told, hey, do less of this. Because I think there is definitely a sense of futility in that, you know, if you'd asked me even just 6 months ago, like, do you think the corporate greed will ever, or do you think these practices will ever, you know, even be remotely toned down? I probably would have said no. And, you know, even if the advice is, well, vote with your wallet, you know, if you don't like something, don't buy it. I would, and this is a really bad philosophy and really bad example to live by, but I would have said, like, well, you know, you can choose not to buy the latest Assassin's Creed, but, like, everyone else is going to, so what's the point? You may as well just buy it. That's a really bad way to live. That's like saying, well, I'm not going to go and vote because, you know, the people who I don't like always win.
It's impossible to live ethically as well.
Yeah.
You can't. There's no way to live perfectly.
No.
You'd be miserable. You wouldn't be able to do anything.
But I'm evidently being proven wrong because finally people are saying, no, Ubi, stop it.
Ubi, stop. Yeah.
And EA, more like, keep doing it. Keep doing that.
But you can also stop with Anthem. You can stop that one.
No, they're still doing plenty of bad things.
No, EA. They definitely are. It's not perfect, but it's clearly improving, or something's changing anyway. It will be interesting to see how these business models sort of translate to PS5 and the new generation that's coming, and whether people will stand for it.
Yeah.
What we've got to remember, though, is that we're in an echo chamber.
Mm.
We are surrounded. We run in circles where people have very similar opinions.
Yeah,
but we're not the majority. We are the hardcore minority.
Mm.
There are maybe 2 million, 3, 4, 5 million. Really in tune video game enthusiasts, perhaps on the planet.
Right.
And the PS4 has sold 106 million units. People do not have the same understanding of how the industry works that we do.
They don't follow the journalistic coverage.
No, and they don't need to. You know, this is a passion for us.
Oh, yeah.
For them, gaming is just a thing they want to do to unwind when they get home. And as much as that's a thing that we like to do as well, the fact that we go one step further in following along with coverage and what's going on, and we know who's making these games and what goes into making these games and the financial situations involved and the financial stakes involved, and the fact that you guys are listening to this and watching this, we are probably all of the same opinion, but we're not the majority.
Yeah.
So it's going to take a lot for these things to change if the uninformed majority continues to support it because they don't know any different. Or, you know, it's not, this isn't to be seen as me sort of ragging on them in any way, because they just genuinely don't care, and that's fine.
No, yeah, exactly. You know? Like, no,
ultimately,
people aren't obliged to follow,
you just don't have to buy it.
Yeah,
you know, that's the bottom line here. It's not, you know, it's not life or death. It's not really that important in the grand scheme of things.
It's just a game, Ninja.
It's just a game, Ninja. It's just a game. So don't, as much as we want things to change, if they are going to, it's going to take a while, because while we may all be singing from the same hymn sheet, the vast majority of people don't even know there's a hymn sheet to sing from.
Yeah. A guy who came to give me a Tesco delivery the other day brought it into my kitchen for me, which is very nice. They don't always do that.
Oh. And I don't let them into my house.
Don't you?
No, I just sort of
take it at the door.
I just put on my rubber gloves so I don't have to touch them.
Yeah. I've got a glass coffee table, and underneath the pane of glass, I've got a load of old games. And he started talking about games while I was standing there unpacking it. And he was talking about what he'd been playing recently. And he said, "Oh yeah, I've been playing that Death Standing." Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Oh yeah." And he said, "Yeah, that was like really weird. Like I really..." So, you know, he was one of those people who evidently didn't really know what Kojima does, probably. He didn't even really get the name of the game right, which is fine. That's just one of those people. And those people are out there who they just sort of pick up a thing they've seen on the shelf in the shop and think, "Oh, yeah, okay, I'll try this."
Yeah.
And they're just sort of not fumbling around, but they're just sort of suck it and see. They're living by the rule of suck it and see.
What on earth does... What is that?
Have you never heard that
No,
that
I
phrase?
Haven't heard that
Our
phrase.
Our maths teacher used to say it, and we all used to think it was very funny.
Has he been U-treed?
Yeah, possibly.
Oh, that's weird, that one. Mm. Anyway, so that's that. I hope that helps. I hope that... I can't even remember what we were talking about. I've just been so thrown off by that phrase.
Suck it and see.
No.
That felt like a big discussion, but it wasn't.
It wasn't. I actually switched these around because I felt like the big discussion I selected instead is more topical.
Yeah.
Because there have been recent developments, so that's why I switched them around. It's time to move on to that big discussion. It's big discussion time. Peter, the big discussion comes from...
Connor Palmer. Connor Palmer.
Would you rather Con or Palmer?
I'd rather Palmer, I think. Yeah. Con or Palmer says, "Hello, Ben and Peter, and the rest of the team. Hi, James." He might actually hear that, and that will really confuse him, so I shouldn't do it too loud. Just with the news that Sony is skipping E3 for the second year in a row, and more news about the event not being as good and renowned as it has been in prior years, with much less announcements. I think he means fewer.
I think he means more.
Do you see E3 possibly being dropped, with companies hosting their own presentations? Sony and Nintendo with State of Play and Directs, for example. I used to stay up and watch them, but now I've got to the point of just watching highlights of the event due to this, and overall being disappointed. Hope to get your opinions. This, it says. Sorry, I've been a bit mean to Connor.
Yes, really rude.
It's a good question, though. Thank you, Connor, very much.
Yes, thank you, Connor. Connor, we've actually spoken at length about this numerous times. There's a video we've made all about it called Is E3 Dead? That will probably give you every single answer you could possibly want. Yeah. Go and look that up. I'll also put it in the link dump if I remember. The main reason I chose this, though, is because there have been more developments this week in the past week or so about who's actually going to be there. We've had another high-profile dropout, Peter.
Yes.
It's Hideo Kojima's best friend.
That's right.
Jeff Keighley.
Is not going to be there.
No.
He was asked, wasn't he? I think.
Go and ask. I think he did a tweet.
Said in his quote, yeah.
So we've got a quote here from Kotaku, which I'll read quickly. I've made the difficult decision to decline to produce E3 Colosseum, referring to the series of live-streamed developer interviews he had put together for the last few years. For the first time in 25 years, I will not be participating in E3. Keighley had attended every E3 show since the show began. I think E3 needs to become more digital and global, he said in a Twitter reply to someone asking about Decision. It's a brand that means a lot to a lot of people. Yes, I'm sorry. There's a brand that means a lot to people, but it shouldn't just be a show floor.
Oh.
How do you read into that? What do you make of that?
Jeff, well, it's a pretty big deal that like someone who has been to 25 E3s is now making the decision not to be there. And I think it's pretty clear. He's not just doing it because, sorry, I'm going to a wedding that day. Mm-hmm. He's like, I think he's well aware that it's kind of on its way out. That might be the wrong choice of words. But yeah, it's certainly...
changing.
It's changing. It's not as maybe prestigious or as exciting as it used to be.
Which is a real bummer because I've always wanted to go to E3.
And we're getting to the point where we might be able to justify going in, maybe not this year, but next year.
And it's not even going to be this. Everyone's going to be allowed. It's not going to be a press event anymore. There's going to be no press conferences from there.
Yeah. I think it is actually a bit of a portent that Jeff Keighley has made the decision not to attend this time.
Yeah.
I think there is some significance in that.
No, definitely. ESA, Entertainment Software Association, that puts on E3. It has high-profile members, you know, with the likes of Microsoft and Sony being involved, at least certainly key people from those companies. They've got a vested interest in obviously making this a thing that is going to succeed and make them a lot of money, which is why they've opened their doors to more people. But clearly that's not gelled well with everyone, in particular Mr. Keighley, who doesn't think it should just be a show floor.
Well,
which I'm not really sure what else E3 could become at that point besides a series of live streams, which it's always been, just to play devil's advocate.
Yeah.
What does he mean by that?
Well, yeah. I mean, it is... All right, there's a physical aspect to it, but it's... I don't think he's actually suggesting that, you know, there shouldn't be. So, yeah, in a way, what is he suggesting? Because it's live streams, they're digital. There should still be a physical component that people can go along to. Hmm. That's what it is now, and that's what it has been for a decade or
more. I love E3. I've never been to E3, so the show floor aspect has never made any impact on me whatsoever. Yeah. So I don't really understand what he means.
Mm.
When he says it shouldn't just be a show floor. Is that maybe some sort of protest because it's become far less press focused? And as you said, it is less prestigious now that anyone can buy a ticket and go along?
So he is actually thinking, or maybe let's dial it back a little bit.
Yeah,
back to
it
when
needs
it
to
used
return
to be,
back
yeah.
to how it was. But then obviously the ESA let loose thousands of journalists' personal information,
yes.
which is a huge breach.
Yes, they
so
did.
Do journalists even want to go? Mm. Yes, they still do, actually. I'd still go, even though the risk is there that I could be doxxed by the ESA.
Well, the ESA, I don't know if this is just coincidental or if they're actually trying to do some damage control here, but according to gamesindustry.biz...
This headline is the best. It just makes it sound like they're just scrambling. This came out just after... Jeff Keighley said he wasn't coming.
So Jeff says, not going. And then almost immediately, ESA names 10 companies still attending E3. Don't worry.
Oh, God.
They're still going to be there.
They'll be all right.
We've got them right here. Several outfits will be there, including Xbox, Nintendo, Ubisoft, Bethesda Softworks, Sega, Capcom, Squeenix, Take-Two Interactive, Bandai Namco, and Warner Bros.
Warner Bros.
Yeah.
So the usual players, basically.
Mm.
I mean, I wasn't expecting them to not be there, you know. But it does feel like they're very much on the back foot. You know, Sony's not coming again. Now Jeff Keighley's not coming. Nintendo are there on the show floor, but they're not doing a press conference from there. Microsoft are there on the show floor, but they're not doing a press conference from there. EA, they're not on there, are they? EA aren't there.
No, they're not.
They've been doing their satellite event for a while. I'm not sure if there was some rumblings about them not even showing up with their satellite event this year.
Because
the EA Play.
Like the day before last time, didn't they?
They did.
Or maybe even on the day, was it? It was pretty much at the start of E3. But
Stadia's not there, which isn't a surprise because I wouldn't want to set up Google Stadia in an environment where everyone's competing for bandwidth.
No, yeah.
Because it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Which kind of defeats the point. But
I mean, at least I think for as long as Ubisoft and Bethesda and I guess sort of Square Enix, Bandai Namco, maybe even, if there are going to be some press conferences from companies like that, who are always bringing out, as we said in a previous question, good quality games, 80% sort of games, even if they're a little bit buggy at times on release.
Yeah, a little bit repetitive.
Yeah, then I think people will always want to watch. You know, I think the day that the ESA lose, Ubisoft and Bethesda are probably the two big ones there in terms of press conference, then it's a little bit, it's a shaky ground going on from there, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's really standing the risk of just becoming another consumer show, which isn't a bad thing, but this is the only thing really that set E3 apart.
Yeah.
Gamescom has become a consumer-focused show. Tokyo Game Show doesn't have any press conferences at it anymore, and that used to be one of the big gaming news destinations for the year.
Yeah.
It'd be Gamescom, E3, and Tokyo Game Show. Then we had Paris Games Week for a hot minute that was important, and then it now isn't. And, you know, I think a lot of these companies are realizing, these companies that are putting on these events are realizing that the overhead, the cost of putting on these shows, they can't justify it purely being a press-only event.
Yeah.
So they have to get the public involved. But when the public get involved, it's not that the press stick their nose up at it, but it certainly lowers the prestige of those events. It certainly makes it less exclusive and makes it less likely for there to be any news coming out of it. And increasingly, as we move away from traditional press conferences and the Nintendo Directs and the PlayStation, whatever the hell it's called, State of Play, and you've got EA doing their EA Play stuff as well, it's seeming more and more likely that these shows are either going to continue to fade or they're just going to disappear entirely.
Yeah, I mean, I even wonder whether any of it can be explained by people being more connected and digitally minded now. I mean, I get it's a bit late for that to be the reason. I maybe would have expected that 5 or 10 years ago. But, you know, just rolling with it, like, maybe because in recent years, everyone is just on social media, you know, every day. People are on YouTube all the time and Twitter and stuff. Maybe these companies feel like, oh, we don't need to show our new stuff off at this specific event when we know that everyone's going to have their eyes on it. Because people have their eyes, broadly speaking, on the internet a lot more nowadays than they did sort of 5 or 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I think they feel like, well, if we just do a state of play whenever we want, you know, August or May or any time of the year, then people are still going to see it, and they're going to see our game. We don't need to make sure our game is at this event where people are going to be watching.
Yeah.
Because people are always watching now, and maybe that's why they feel we don't need to worry too much about that.
And it's an incredibly tedious and boring aspect to come at it from.
Mm.
But you've got to remember that the cost of flying however many people to an event, you know, or encouraging several companies all to fly to you to put on an event together where they've got to compete with one another, when they could stay home and broadcast from a studio on whatever day they choose and dominate the news.
Yeah,
it's a pretty alluring prospect from a business position, as much as I selfishly don't like it, because I like to see them all compete with each other. I like the spectacle of it. It's a one-stop destination for video game hype.
Mm-hmm.
It's video game Christmas.
Yeah.
And it's being taken away from us by the Grinch of being sensible.
Yeah.
By the sensible Grinch. It's just easier for them to not go because they don't have to. I still think it's good to maybe go in the capacity that Nintendo does, just to let people play their games.
Mm-hmm.
But like Nintendo, why would you do a press conference there when you've got to compete with everyone else?
Yeah,
why would you do it? Why would you do it at some ungodly hour, because it's the only time that you can fit in with everyone else, when, you know, you can just do it whenever you want, before or after everybody else is gone.
Yeah.
It doesn't, you know, you don't have to rent space. You don't have to get all the journalists in. Everybody can watch from home. Everybody can cover it at the same time. It makes sense, as much as it sucks, because I would love to have gone to E3 in its heyday, even though E3 in its heyday was only a few years ago.
Yeah.
It's just dropping off at a rapid rate. So I don't know what the future holds. But it's probably not going to be long before it just becomes a consumer event, and then it's not E3 anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if maybe after a few years of lull where there's not this big video games Christmas, as you say, maybe someone will kind of come out of the woodwork and say, hey, so we're putting this event on in the summer. Maybe Sony, do you want to come and do a few trailers? Maybe Microsoft, do you want to come? I don't know. I don't know if anyone has enough oomph to be able to just come out of nowhere. Jeff.
It's basically the Game Awards. That's what the Game Awards are. The Game Awards features more exclusive reveals now than E3 does.
As I was describing that really thing, I was like, this is just the Game Awards I'm talking about.
Gamescom Opening Night Live, if they do that again this year, that might continue to gain traction because companies don't need to physically be there. Mm-hmm. They can just send a couple of trailers and that's it. And then it's a fun little mini war rather than let's pour millions of dollars into
staging and
into putting on this people. Big show. We've got to pay the man to say world premiere. We've got to, you know how much that guy costs? It's
loads.
Expensive. It's loads of money. We just keep him in a box all the time. We've got him on retainer so he doesn't go over to PlayStation. Mad.
In other related news, Sony aren't going to be at PAX East either because of coronavirus.
The coronavirus. They don't want to go.
Sony aren't going to be anywhere. If you want your Sonys, just go to Sony HQ.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
I'm starting to get a little bit concerned now.
About what?
About Sony not coming to anything.
Oh, I thought you meant about coronavirus.
No. I don't care. I'll just take me. Just kill me. I don't care.
You're concerned about Sony not coming to things.
I am, yeah. I'm really hoping that when they eventually announce this event, presumably where they're going to talk about the PS5, which hopefully isn't too much longer, they'll then start to open up again. I feel like if they aren't going to go to any consumer shows, be it for corona, be it for deadly viruses, or because they don't like the ESA, they need to start doing PSX again, PlayStation Experience, where they had their own press conference, and that was brilliant. Mm-hmm. That was so good. A focused event about them and the brand. Perfect.
Yeah, you're not competing with anyone.
You can still do state of play, and I realized that putting on an event all for you, extremely expensive. Mm-hmm. But what a way to encourage community growth and to get people excited about things that you're working on. But as it stands, they've got absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
It's February, it's nearly March, and we've had nothing.
It would be nice to think that the reason they're doing that is because, you know, they know they've got a new generation coming out soon, and they really haven't released, or I guess there are some releases later on this year that are quite enticing, but I kind of feel like they've not actually had too much to talk about anyway at these events. Like, you know, what would they have actually shown at E3 last year? Yeah. Like, I don't really know. Maybe like one or two things. But, you know, hopefully the reason they've not been attending is because they feel like we don't have a massive, like, sort of package of things that we can, like, compete with the other conferences with. So we're not going to bother showing up and doing, like, oh, here's three games we're doing.
Right.
So, yeah, maybe when they've got a whole new platform to work with and hopefully there's a bunch of exciting exclusives coming out, they might feel the need to start showing up to these things again.
But, yeah. I hope they're just being quiet because they're building something.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they can just explode and be like, okay, we're back. We've been quiet for the last year because the wind down of the console.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Here we go. Mm. That's best case scenario. They may just continue to be weird and quiet and then they start to annoy people, which is not what they want at all. Right.
There you go.
Let us know what you think about all that in the comments below. Very big. Mm. Let's move on to the end of the show. Peter, if people wanted to get in contact with us, how would they do that and how would they find us?
We're at Team Triple Jump, flipping everywhere.
Yeah.
YouTube.com and Twitch.tv / Team Triple Jump. It's where all our content goes out. We've got videos on YouTube, of course. That's what it's for. Mm-hmm. And also streams on Twitch and YouTube, which are modded in both cases by Lord Brotovich and Cecil Prumps. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our social medias are twitter.com and facebook.com/Team Triple Jump. Luke Eldon is over on Facebook, the Elden Ring, just looking after the Facebook. So he's there doing great work. We've got a Patreon, patreon.com/, you guessed it, Team Triple Jump.
No way.
You can ask questions for the podcast. You can see Worst Games Ever early. You can get exclusive access to a special room in our Discord, which is bit.ly/Team Triple Jump, modded by Jack, Joe, and Crimson Dragonfly. There's all kinds of rewards on that Patreon. The podcast, if you're watching on video, is available in audio form at play.acast.com/s/triplejump. And the website is triplejer.merp. We got a shop. We got careers. Not right now.
Well, we don't have careers, but
we've got a page for careers that doesn't have anything on it at the moment.
Yeah, is it even live?
Maybe not.
Might not even be there.
I think it might be there, but empty, but I'm not sure.
Either way, no jobs currently.
No.
Go away. We have lists, Peter. Every Tuesday and Thursday, streams every Monday, Tuesday and Thursday, Monday, Tuesday being on Twitch, the solo streams, Thursday being the joint Blaze It stream on YouTube. Worst games ever. It's fortnightly. Friday for patrons of a certain tier. That's $5, isn't it?
It is.
And Sunday for everybody else. It is a Worst Games Ever week. Mm-hmm. There will be an episode of Worst Games Ever tomorrow for everybody, and it would have been yesterday at the time of release for the patrons. Podcast every Saturday. Shows every other week. Now, you can follow Peter and I on Twitter, if you like, at @ThatPeterAustin and @Confused_Dude, and on Instagram, at @ThatPeterAustin and @BenPotter20.
I changed my PSN name to @ThatPeterAustin now.
Did you? Have you done it?
Yeah, because I wasn't able to do it before, because it was like an offensive term. Somewhere in there, yeah.
So Peter is no longer an offensive term now?
Yeah, it's not an offensive term, so I'm now @ThatPeterAustin,
which is
so
nice, because
it just matches everywhere, which is good. Don't try and add me. I don't add anyone who I don't know.
You need to lock down your friend request.
I already have done. Yeah. But that's what I mean. Don't bother looking for me, because I'm not there.
You won't find me.
No.
I'm a ghost. Leave us a review on iTunes, won't you? Please. It helps. Something to do with algorithms. Now, obviously, this week we've got Worst Games Ever, but also we had a world exclusive stream on
world
YouTube.
Premiere.
Of Murder by Numbers, which is a fantastic little puzzle game. It comes from the glorious minds of behind Hatoful Boyfriend.
Yeah.
And among other things, I think it's got music from the Ace Attorney musical person. Brilliant little game. We were fortunate enough to be one of two people, the other being Hannah, formerly of the Oxcast, who we worked with a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
To stream the game for the first time. So if you're interested in that game, you're interested in puzzle games, please come check it out. It's going to be on Switch and Steam and all sorts of other places, I think. So we'll have the full details on the stream. The VOD will be going up on Monday. So go check it out.
Yeah,
go check that out. Right, just enough time to talk about today's sponsor.
Who is it, Ben?
It's Doom Fraternal. It's a new movie. It's directed by Paul Feig of Bridesmaids, The Heat, and the Ghostbusters all-female remake fame. And it stars Kristen Wiig as Greg and Melissa McCarthy as Johanna's two brothers who have survived the end of the world. Mm-hmm. There's a demon invasion. They befriend a demon called Jeremy. It's all fun. They're a couple of bumbling fools. You won't believe the hijinks they get into. It's crazy. Paul Feig just lets them do whatever they want, as Paul Feig tends to do. And wow, comedy brilliance. You should go check it out. It's in cinemas in March. That's real.
It's alive.
Okay, we'll see you all next time. Enjoy your weekend. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.